This is fun stuff. Policies is never a fun thing to talk about. It's boring to some people. But it's necessary, it's important. So we'll go over what our outline for following and implementing policies is. What does a policy do? We're gonna go over the CCSG General Volunteer Policy, or Ministry Questionnaire Form, Statement of Faith, Behavior, Safety, Ending Your Service, and upcoming changes that we have here at the church. So, before you switch the slide, just shout out, what does a policy do? What's the purpose of a policy? Before I get into the stuff, what are you guys, what's your guys' reasons why you think a policy is necessary, or what does a policy do in ministry? You can shout it out. Everyone's on the same page.
Jesus.
Oh. Jesus is our policy. Unity, instruction. Structure? Okay.
Stops division.
Stops division.
Sued.
Okay. Well, I heard something over here.
Guidelines.
That's fun. Yeah. Those are, I mean, you guys, I don't need to teach this one. Good. But yeah, we're going to be talking about what does a policy do, and it helped. The first one, he left. He went bye-bye. It's okay. What does a policy do? It helps us make decisions. A policy provides clear guidelines. Whoever said guidelines over here. For certain situations, so we don't have to waste time deciding what to do. This is just as true for a church or a business. A policy empowers people and lets them know how to do certain tasks. The worst thing we can have is we change the way we do things on volunteers. This month, we did it this way. This month, we did it that way. And then we come back. Like, I think a lot of our ministries have, like, one on, two off. You serve once, you're off for 2 months, so that we can rotate between all the volunteers. And then you serve once, you come back for your rotation, essentially 4 months from when you served. And you come back, and then everything's done a different way. And then you leave and you come back and it's all done a different way. Like, you know, we intend and we try not to do that. But it's important for our volunteers to know their mark, know what the expectation is, know what is right and what's wrong. How can we hold anyone accountable when the target is just moving? And so it helps us even make decisions so that when we write it down and you are confronted with the situation in ministry and you're like, how do I deal with this? Well, what does the policy say? How do we handle these type of situations? And then you go by the policy and it guides us, but ultimately we can make a decision whether we, you know, in this scenario, we're gonna uphold it. In this scenario, we might kind of change a little bit of how we uphold it. But we at least have a mark and a guide of how we make decisions. The next one is that they provide a great training resource. Everyone should be clear on and going in the same direction. Someone, I guess, alluded to that when you guys raised your hand, you guys said that. written policies can tell volunteers how to do their jobs. Many jobs have certain tasks that are done over and over, and a clear policy provides the instructions for those tasks. Just as a simple example, when you make coffee, in the espresso ministry, there's a recipe, and there's an order to it. And if you put the ice at the wrong time, or you pour the espresso in at the wrong order, it changes what the coffee tastes like. Like, if we're getting really into like the nitty gritty, like there's a certain way that it's made. And if then you cutting a corner as a volunteer, well, I'm gonna do it this way because this seems easier or quicker for me. But then all of a sudden everyone's like, why does the coffee taste a little different? I don't know what it is, but it tastes different. And it's just because someone changed the way that we were doing stuff. And so it gives direction so we can do things. Again, that's a really simple thing. I'm sure the cleaning ministry has policies as you don't mix this chemical with that chemical. Like, we clean these things a certain way. Or maybe some cleaning ministry is like, I just spray. I use this bottle for that. Or I'm using the disinfectant for the glass because I'm too lazy to go get the other bottle. Whatever. It provides a great training resource of this is why we do what we do. Do we do this very well? Do we have everything documented? No, which we're going to get to. One of the last things that's the changes that are coming. We'll talk about that. But also the next thing is that they protect the volunteer. Everyone wants to know what is required of them on the job or when they're serving. By giving our volunteers guidelines on how to do their job, there will be no misunderstanding. We want our volunteers to feel confident. If they have clear guidelines, they will not, they're not going to be running around looking for their ministry leader and asking for guidelines or for guidance. But if they know how to handle things or how to do stuff, they're not always waiting like, well, Rachel is not around, and so I don't know how to deal with this, and so I'm not going to do it. But if you have it documented and it's clear, you can do it yourself. You don't have to wait for the leader to be there if you have the policy written out for you. The next thing is that they protect the church, kind of like what Joy was saying, Sue. But it's more for a volunteer who does not follow our guidelines or policies. We have the opportunity to provide corrective action or remedy in training, or even ask people to step down because of the way that they're doing stuff correctly or incorrectly. Without clear guidelines and policy, it becomes much more difficult to take corrective action or transition someone who is not following guidelines. Policies that are written down are clearer than those that are only verbal. If you are a ministry leader, this is my encouragement to you, if you are a ministry leader and everything you do is verbal, well, I told them. I explained it to them 5 times, but is it written down anywhere? Well, no. Okay, well then how can the volunteer know how to hit the mark? Or I'll share this example. This is an example that has happened, not at this church, so I can share it. I can talk about it. It was the way that someone dressed on Sunday. They're on the worship team, and they were wearing something just not modest, and it was a little bit like the question was, did you go over the what's it called, the policy of gosh. Thank you for giving me the words. Everyone gave it to me. You saw this. A dress code policy. Thank you. Gosh, I felt attacked. Thank you. The dress code policy. And they asked, did you go over the dress code policy with them? And they're like, we did. I was like, okay, then why are they dressed that way? And I was like, well, I don't know. And the thing was, this is a teaching moment, not just for the ministry leader, but for the volunteer. But the ministry leader was, they saw it. Until the pastor came and was like, hello? And they're like, I know. They're like, why did you wait for me to come up to you? Why didn't you just handle it? Well, I don't know. I mean, like, they're new. Yeah. That's an opportunity to show them and to teach them. And so then they were, you know, they shared. And come to find out, the person, yeah, I got the policy, but I never read it. I was like, okay. Well, now read it, and now you're going to remember this because now I've had to, like, correct it. But you can't dress like that on, like, Sunday. Like, it's not, you're not going to the beach. You're coming to church, and you're on stage, and you're worshiping, and it's like, you know. And then also there's been other stuff that's happened. But the fact that we had a policy made the conversation a lot easier to have. It didn't feel like I was attacking you. It didn't feel like it was just coming out of left field, and this is my preference. It was like, this is what the policy says. It's not me, it's the policy. And I'm just sharing it with you, and I'm just trying to make sure that you understand. And it was like, and there was no offense. It was like, oh no, I totally get it. It's just, this is how, I mean, Calvary Chapel churches are known to be come as you are churches. And yeah, come as you are, whatever, it's fine. But then when you come and worship and you are on stage and you are leading people in worship, we don't want to be a distraction to people where now people are looking at like me and not hearing what I'm leading you in worship. And so the why was explained and the examples were explained. And then the person was like, I totally get it. That totally makes sense. But they were afraid as a leader to even have the conversation. So it was a learning experience for the leader to be able to like, okay, like I can't be afraid to step in to these things. And so that's why policies are important. Pastor Jerry talked about a policy about service animals in the sanctuary and the reason why he holds to, or why we hold to the policy of like, unfortunately, we just don't allow animals in the sanctuary, even though I know it's a service animal. But that's a policy that we've chosen. And so no longer does it have to be like, it still sucks. You have to be the one that's like, I'm sorry, you know, this, that, or the other. But it helps the person's like, that's our policy as a church. And you can confidently say it. It's not an attack. It's like, it's not you. It's just that's our policy. And I'm sorry. And so the policies help protect the church. I encourage you as volunteers or as ministry leaders to make sure if you haven't documented your policies, to document your policies. Because it's going to help your volunteers and it helps you not have to be repetitive and repetitive and repetitive. And you get a new volunteer, like in children's ministry, their rotation is on one, off two. And then Rachel or Matt don't have to spend their time every single month re-explaining the exact same thing over and over again. Or it's like, have you looked at your policies? Have you looked at your handbook? Which we'll get to, changes that are coming. But does that make sense? Policies and the reasons why we have them. And so policies are good. They can actually take a lot of the tension out of situations because we can uphold the policy, okay? we as a church are, you know, we're a medium-sized church. Perspective is everything. For some people, this is a big church, and for some people, this is a small church. For some people, this is just right. For me, this church is just right. But for some people, like, you know, however you see our church, the more we're growing, this church is growing a lot, and so we want to we're taking a look at the way we have things documented, and we're trying to do a better job. And so that's coming. Maybe I'm sharing these things and you're like, I have not seen one policy at this church. What is this brother talking about? Well, don't you worry. Don't you worry. It's coming. The next thing we're talking about is the Calvary Chapel St. George General Volunteer Policy. So if you're a volunteer, you have filled out a ministry questionnaire. Whenever you volunteer, everyone has to fill one out. I don't care if it's just a simple thing that I'm doing. It's just, I serve once a month. Sorry, you got to fill it out. The reason why is because there's several aspects to this, which we're going to review what that is. But we want people to understand the church's statements of faith, because it's important, because it helps volunteers serve in unity with the leadership, but most importantly, it helps volunteers remain in unity with God and the Father, God the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Also, while serving, the volunteers can minister effectively to people because the volunteers and the pastor are ministering the same message. So when you open this up, right here, it's what we believe. And so if you're new to our church, or if you want to start volunteering, we ask you to make sure you read this. And then we have an acknowledgement page on the actual ministry questionnaire on the form is, what does it say? Please read Calvary Chapel's What We Believe document carefully. Do you agree with this? Yes or no? Do you have any reservations or questions? We give, like, yes, and then we can talk to you about it. But we want to make sure, as volunteers, we are serving on the same page. I believe the same things you believe. Because an alarming thing, I mean, like, let's just, a dramatic situation. I'm a volunteer, a new volunteer, but I have different beliefs in certain interpretations of doctrine. And I believe that. But if we don't have this process, I wouldn't have known that. And then now this volunteer is serving, and they're sharing this different perspective of doctrine or their belief system or whatever, and we never checked that. And then they're sharing these things, and there's all these people talking about, oh yeah, God is this, and he does this, and we're like, where did that come from? It's like, oh, this guy who's volunteering, he's like, I got it from him. And I'm like, what? Who is this guy? So, like, that's just like a very extreme, like, random situation. Has not happened here. But I'm just saying, like, it's like, that's why we want to make sure that you as volunteers or ministry leaders are aligned with us. So we're on the same page, because if we're not, then the question would be, then why do you want to serve here if you don't agree with the things we agree with? Like, why would you want to serve here? You know, it's like, oh, okay. Then the cynical side of me, or the suspicious side of me, I'm like, do you want a platform? Like, are you like trying to kind of like you're just looking for a door in, because you have your own agenda? Because obviously you're not on the same page with us. Then why would you want to serve here if you're not on the same page? So that's why it's important that we go through this and we understand the statement of faith. So we can say, like, I'm in full agreement with this church. And then a step further that we go is that there's a background check. And so we background check everyone. Everyone. Just because, I'm going to just say this, just because something will come up on your background check doesn't mean you can't serve. It depends where you want to serve and what comes up on your background check. But we'll sit down with you and ask you, like, hey, like, something came up on your background check. What is this? Like, we talk about it. And then, you know, we're not so, you know, strict that it's like, well, no, now, because that was on your background check, God has no use for you. You can't serve. That's not at all true. We will find a way that we can integrate you. But if it's serious enough, we're like, hey, we have made a promise to parents here that they can feel safe, that their kids are with people that have been screened, and you don't have to worry about them. So we go through the process to make sure everyone is going to be background checked so parents can feel at ease. But I don't care if you're dealing with cameras, you're going to get background checked. because we want to know, like, if there's anything that we need to know, anything unsavory, anything that it's like, hey, like, just we just want to have a conversation. It's not an issue. Oh, yeah, it was 30 years ago. Okay, that's fine. We want to just talk about it and just know that at least if it comes up, you're protected. It's like, no, we got your back. Your parents are like, did you know this person, this and that, did this 30 years ago? I'm like, it was 30 years ago. They're fine. We have references. There's a testimony that they are of a good reputation. Like, do we not believe that we are new creations in Christ? Like, that's their past. But the fact is that we went through the process, and at least we knew about it, and we were aware of it. And so that's why it's important that we have background checks, because we want to give you guys peace to know my kids, because there might be situations where the, like, we're trying to maintain ratios in children's ministry, and then we get overwhelmed, and we got to bring someone in that wasn't on the schedule. But because we didn't background check all our volunteers, we're like, wait, hold on, you don't serve in children's ministry, you didn't get background check, wait, like, and so then we're like nervous of who do we pull in. But since everyone's background check is like, hey, come in, I know you're good because you already filled it out, go and serve, because we don't have anything questionable about you. How that helps, just like being able to know, we're all background checked. We all know. If anything came up, the red flags, we would know. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's what this is, just explaining a little bit more in depth. If you've never filled one out and you're serving, fill one out, please. But our ministry leaders are pretty good at making sure, like, they don't have clearance to, like, progress on onboarding you to their ministry unless you go through that process. So a couple of other things that we want to talk about implementing, following and implementing policies, is behavior. Importance of outlining volunteer behavior. A volunteer represents God and the church. So there's a standard by which the volunteer should conduct themselves. No one is asking for perfection, because we know that we all fall short, but we all strive to live a life that is aligned with the Bible. So areas that need to be addressed for behavior or moral conduct, violent behavior, confidentiality, attendances and absences, and grievances. These are type of behaviors that as ministry leaders, as you guys, should be addressing. You guys shouldn't be afraid to step into these situations to address a moral conduct. You're like, I know that they're doing some stuff that they shouldn't be doing, but yet they're here teaching Bible study, and you're their overseer. Like, you got to address those things. Or violent behavior. You're like, you know of a domestic violence situation in a family, and they're serving like it didn't happen. It's like, hey, like, we got to just have a conversation. Like, what's going on? Like, are you okay? Whether you're the victim or the perpetrator or whatever, it's like, you can't have you serving right now. We need to take a pause, and we need to talk about this. Like, what's going on right now? Confidentiality, if there's just some things that are just some private things that need to be addressed, you got to be able to address those things. Attendance and absences, like if a volunteer is consistently not showing up or they're always late, if there's no history of, I've asked you, it's been documented, volunteers are supposed to be here 20 minutes before they serve or 30 minutes before they serve, whatever, and you're always here at the beginning of service, I have no time to get you in place. I have no time to get you ready. And so I need you to please come. And if it keeps happening, you got to have those sit down conversations. But if you never let the volunteer know the expectation, it's like, it's not on them, it's on you. But maybe the argument can be also, it's like, well, it's common sense. Why do I have to tell them to be here on time? Common sense isn't common anymore, unfortunately. And like people, we're people. And so people are just going to find, You know, justifications. I woke up late, but I don't want to tell them I woke up late. I was lazy, so I'm going to make up this reason. Oh, this thing happened, and, you know, like, it was crazy last night, and so whatever. It's like, come on, just be real. You woke up late. That was, traffic got me here. It's Sunday in St. George. Ain't no traffic. What are you talking about? And so it's like, we want to make sure we have the confidence to address attendance or absence issues in volunteers. And so don't be afraid as ministry leaders to do that. Or there's a grievance. You know that someone has a grievance, or they are frustrated, they're angry about something, they're mad. You as a ministry leader, knowing that, need to step in to like, hey, like, what's the problem? Like, why does it seem like you're like, you're grumbling? You're like you're just unhappy while you're here. Like, what's going on? I don't like what the pastor said on Sunday. Like, it rubbed me the wrong way. It convicted me. Okay? Well, we can't have you serving right now if you're going to be like grumpy pants, and like, that's not fair. Like, you can't, like, hi, welcome, here's your chair, and you're mad about it. Like, hey, like, we got to address this. So, safety. The importance of safety. We strive to provide an environment where members and visitors of all ages feel safe and secure. Just as the employees in a place of business are on the front lines, ensuring the safety of customers, the volunteers of the church serve as on the front lines, ensuring the safety of those who we are ministering to. So that would be our children. Like, don't you want to know as a parent that your children are safe and that we're keeping that stuff in mind? And so the areas that we address or that we can address in safety, there's general guidelines. There's a safety team here at the church, and they have their own policies, and they've been trained, and they know their stuff apart from like our all the other ministries. And so we have safety policies in place, and it's those type of ministries that it's like, you don't need to know. It's better you don't know what we have planned, or what it's like, it just know you're safe. And it's just better. I mean, for me, I'm like, I don't need to know who's on the safety team. I don't need to know what, like, you know, you guys have planned. And so, but just know that we have plans like that. We have fire prevention. We're going to be having a fire drill alarm thing for children's ministry, what, in April? What? March 17th? That, I know it's coming up. I mean, I got to help make a graphic for it. But there's fire prevention, and so our children's ministry does fire drills throughout the year so that teachers, the volunteers, and the children can be trained on what happens. This is what happens in emergency. We walk out of these doors, and we stay close together, and this is who you check into. We have those type of safety measures in place. Fire emergency. Pastor Steve just went around and looked at the fire extinguishers, and they're due to get whatever we recertified. Stop yelling at me. Jeez. I'll get the words eventually. Thank you. They need to get recertified, and so he went and made a call, and now they're going to get recertified. But we have fire extinguishers throughout. We have, you know, like, we have plans and stuff out there. Power failures. If there's a power failure, there's things that we got to be mindful of what happens when there's a power outage and how do we exit the building. There's little maps. I've seen them. There's like a map right there on, like, if there's an issue, how do we exit out of this property? First aid. We have an AED here on the property. I'm drawing a blank where it's at, but it's here. I've seen it. Okay, well, all the health people, the medical people know where it's at. That's great. Don't ask me, Josh, with the AED? I don't know. I forgot. But we have one. And then we have CPR. We actually have, like, this massive trauma kit that that Pastor Steve has. And he's like, this isn't first aid. Don't come to it for a bandage. This is for, like, trauma, like tourniquets and, like, big situations. And he's like, people will be rummaging through my bag thinking it's just like a bandage for a little simple cut. I have different first aid kits for that, but I have literally a trauma kit here if there were to be a serious issue here at the church. If someone gets shot, if someone gets cut, if something happens catastrophically, we have a kit here that can help with that. Okay? That make you guys feel safer? Or you guys are like, oh my gosh. Makes this more real. And then we have CPR classes. I think we have a CPR class coming up eventually, soon, at some point. I need to take the class because my certification expired. But we do all these different things here at the church, and because we want to make sure people feel safe, okay? And so it's good for you guys to know about it, and for your volunteers, for you to educate your volunteers. Like, I think when you're volunteering, I don't know if people do this, but like, if you're volunteering, you should be like, where's my nearest exit where I'm serving? Where should be my evacuation path? Where is the nearest fire extinguisher? So when, if I need it, I'm not like, where is it? And I've never been in this church my whole life, and I don't even know where this is. You guys should be able to like at least know and identify. It's like, I know there's one here, I know there's one there. All of the, what's it called, the fire extinguisher things are unlocked. Ideally they're locked and you break the glass, but we don't want to break the glass, and so just open it. Don't break the glass. They're unlocked. You're going to be like, shh, and then someone opens it. It was open the whole time. So, anyways, that's safety. And then ending your service. This is a big one. It's importance of policies when you're ending your service. This is a very important area to understand either as a volunteer or as a ministry leader. Everyone comes to a point where they step down from serving in ministry. We are all going to step down from ministry at some point. There is a proper way of doing it, whether it's resignation, disqualification, which we don't want, a season of rest. We want to ensure that this is done properly. What you don't want is you don't want to be the volunteer who just stops showing up. And the leaders, like, keep sending you the schedule, and they keep reaching out to you, and you just stop showing up, and it's like, what's going on? Like, you just, and I see you at church, and you're like, I stopped serving, but you never told me. It's like, but me not showing up should have told you, right? Like, does that sound right? That sounds kind of messed up, right? So we want to make sure that we end well and give notice. It's like, hey, I have this going on with my life. This doesn't work. This day doesn't work for me to serve. Okay, let's change a different day. It's like, no, it's just too much right now. I need to step down from serving. Okay, that's fine. As long as you communicate and you step down and you give enough notice so that the ministry leader can make a plan. Because if you're just like, hey, like next, like tomorrow I'm not showing up and I'm not going to show up anymore. Like, I got stuff going on. And it's like, okay, like, how am I going to like cover you like in such short notice? Like, it's always best practice, just in the same way in the secular world, when you quit, it's nice to give two-week notice, right? That's like standard practice. There's some people who don't like practicing that, and they're like, forget them. Like, I'm going to quit. You want to end, just how in the world you would end well, you want to end your service well here. But there are some times where it's like, hey, like, I've fallen into some sin, and I need to address that sin, and I can't serve right now. Like, that's mature of you to be able to come forward and make that known that you need to step down. But if you simply are like, hey, like, I'm just transitioning to a different city, and I'm going to be moving soon, and then all of a sudden you tell us, hey, this is my last week in here, I'm moving. It's like, did you not know at all that you were moving and didn't let us know that you're going to be heading out? Like, you got to make your plans so you can start your transition to leave. And like, hey, like, I want to. The best situation is you just don't leave, but you raise someone up to replace you, and then you walk away. That's the best way to walk away from a ministry is that you raise someone up to take over your ministry, or to take over even, it's like, I'm just a volunteer. I don't do, what I do is very simple. Like, it's not that hard. No, it might be, because there's no one else who wants to serve in the nursery. And so, like, how you need to replace yourself. Like, that would be ideal for you to replace yourself in ministry. So this is just an encouragement. If you're ever coming to a point where you got to end your service somewhere, do it the right way. Because if you don't do it the right way, it's going to cause stress. It's going to possibly make things like, it's like, hey, ministry leaders talk to each other. And then being like, hey, like, this person just like abandoned my ministry and they left and they're now serving in your ministry. I'm not gossiping, but I'm just telling you, be careful. Like, they're, I hope they don't just up and leave your ministry also. So it's like, that's not, like, you want to have a good reputation even within the ministry. It's like, yeah, he's served, this guy has literally served every single ministry at this church, but he has ended well at every single ministry. Like, he's welcome to come serve here anytime. I keep using he because I don't want to offend a woman. And be like, well, what are you talking about? Just kidding. Almost kidding. Okay, upcoming changes. There's some changes coming. This is an area, if we're talking about growth and we want to get better, this is an area we want to grow. I know that we have things documented, but I also know there are a lot of places things aren't documented. So there are upcoming changes here at the church. One of the things that I'm going to, this is one of my things that I want to do, is training manuals for every ministry. And it's going to be this, like, this is the way I think anyway. But each ministry will develop training manuals and role descriptions for each type of volunteer. We're doing this even as a staff. The staff doesn't know this. I'm sharing this right now. But we're working on an employee handbook. We've never had an employee handbook as a church, or at least from what Jerry and I have talked about, we don't have one. And so I've been working on an employee handbook for the last couple of months, because there are things, even as staff, that there are some staff members that have said, I never knew that. I didn't know that, you know? And I was asking a lot of questions. I'm the new guy. How do we handle this? Oh, no, we don't do that. Well, what about this? Yeah, why should we do this? And I'm like, what? Like, no one ever told me this. Like, and so, like, just the same way that we're creating an employee handbook, that's going to lay out policies, procedures, conduct, expectations, days off, how do you handle vacation, you know, staff has a blackout of vacation time. Like, we don't take vacation the last 2 months of the year because that is like our high season of ministry. So we tell everyone, take your vacation before November, take it. This last year, we had everyone, almost everyone, take vacation the same month because everyone forgot. And then people were like, and so then like, we're like, it, when it came to November, everyone was like, all this stuff is undone because all these staff members were gone for such a long time. And so this year, I've been telling everyone, look at vacation, plan it timely, because if there's another more than two staff members going on vacation, you can't go on vacation. There's no more space. And so we're creating an employee handbook so we can lay these things out and make it very clear. And in that same way, we're going to create training manuals for all the different ministries so that every ministry could be like, here's our training manual. This is who we are. This is what we do. Okay. Again, this isn't like fun stuff to be hearing about and talking about, but as we're growing and we're like, now this class is new and things we want to grow in, we're going to be documenting these things. And I have a few projects I'm trying to end, and I'm going to get onto the training manuals and get with ministry leaders. And so if you're a ministry leader and you serve and you're not on staff, you're a volunteer ministry leader, I'm going to be getting with you, and we're going to be working on creating like a document. And it doesn't have to be complicated. Because we don't need to like add words just to make it look like we did something. It can be simple, but as long as we have something documented so that when you bring in new people, you're like, this is everything you need to know. And all the different roles that you can serve in this ministry are documented here, so you can know the expectation and you're not just like, what am I supposed to do? And what does that mean? And I didn't know that. And then you keep getting corrected and corrected and corrected. It's like, how come no one's ever told me this? So that's a change that's coming. And a change that you guys have already seen is volunteer and leader training. So like this class, like Ministry 101 and 102, these are a new change that you guys are happening right now. But more classes are on the horizon. Some other classes that are in place that already happened that disciple is CMD, Children's Ministry Discipleship. That's already a training that happens for Children's Ministry quarterly. If you're a Children's Ministry leader or volunteer, you got to go to those because that is your opportunity. Just how this is a training moment, Children's Ministry Discipleship meetings are the moment that children's ministry leaders get poured into, or ministry or children's ministry volunteers. So make sure you go to that. Johnny started a youth leader group. So he's been sitting with his leaders, going through a book and pouring into them. The pouring into those youth leaders isn't just so that we can fill time. It's to pour into them because what Johnny's trying to do is he's trying to create a leadership team that can help him carry the load, because Johnny, as dynamic of a leader and how great of a leader he is, he can't do everything. He can't be everywhere. And so that's why he's raising up leaders. So he has a youth leader group. We're going to have a life group leader training. So we have life groups going on right now. We're going to go on break for the summer, and then we're going to relaunch life groups again in the fall. We're going to relaunch life groups in a in a different way. We're going to have a different approach. We're going to do things differently. We're going to have things documented and laid out a little bit more intentionally, but we're going to be asking, this was our vision. We're doing Ministry 101 and 102 in the beginning of the year, and then we're going to do life group leader training for the fall so that people feel they've been equipped to be in ministry, so that when they step into a life group leader, because we're going to be pushing for new life group leaders. So I want to ask, I'm putting this seed out there to you guys. If you have been interested in being a life group leader, there's going to be a training that's going to come that it's going to equip you. But we're looking for more people to say, here I am. Send me within the life group realm. We want to be able to make more opportunities around our city during the week where you guys are going to dive in deeper into Sunday's message. And so there's many type of needs. I would love to see a life group during the day, during a weekday, at 10 o'clock or 12 o'clock, for moms who are like, my downtime is during nap time. Or the kids are at school, and that's my time that I am actually most free, is when the kids are at school. And so I can dedicate a couple of hours to do a life group with other moms. Like, wouldn't that be amazing instead of the mall being at nighttime? When the kids need dinner and the kids are running around, it's like, let's change the dynamic of the way we see life group. And that's going to be the push of what life groups are going to be. It's like, hey, like maybe like there was this life group that tried to get started and it didn't work out and we thought it would. But there was a guy who was saying, how about I have life group when it ends by 5 o'clock? So that those older people who don't like driving at night can go to life group and not drive at night. And there were so many people that asked. No one signed up. I was like, I don't know. So it's just, we are wanting to, this is our moment to train. And then we're going to build upon that training for life leader or life group leader training approaching in the fall. So there's going to be another opportunity. So I'm putting that out there. If you're kind of like, I don't know if I can lead a life group. It'd be great to have young adult life groups. It'd be great to have life groups for people with young families that have kids. That's a need in our church. It'd be great to have a life group for young single guys that they're like, I don't feel like I belong in a life group because it's all couples, but like everyone's married. And it's like, okay, what about a life group for young single guys or a life group for young single girls? Like, it's possible. A life group for widows. Like, we don't have these things in the church. And we can, there's needs. And so, like, don't look at your situation as like, how can I be a cookie cutter life group? We don't want that. The season in your life is possible for you to minister to other people in that same exact same season. So just want to put that out there to you. That's coming up. And so just, if you guys ever say, I never knew about life group leader training, lies. Lies. I told you about it. Okay? Make sense? You guys okay? Mm-hmm. We're on our last topic. I'm going to be mute tomorrow at church. I'm going to be like, I can't talk. All right. The next one, which is, it's going to be tough. Oh. Resolving conflict. This one's a tough one. There's conflict in ministry. I'm not saying there's conflict right now. I'm just saying there's conflict in ministry. There will always be conflict. As a ministry leader, you're going to be confronted with issues. As a ministry leader, you're going to be confronted with difficult people. Ministry isn't ministry if people weren't messy. People are messy. I'm messy. I've told you, when was it? I think it was this last Sunday I taught. I was like, I'm going to fail you one day. I will. And so that's why it's important. And this isn't like exhaustive, but this is just really simple to just review on what conflict resolution looks like from the Bible. And the reason why I think this is important for you guys to know is to know how to deal with conflict. How to press in with it. I have done this. I've taught this. I've gone to a church. I went to a church plant in Mexico City, and there was just drama at the church. Like, just discord, gossip, backbiting, jealousy. Like, I was like, this church is crazy. And I came there to do a training class that had nothing to do with conflict resolution. And the pastor asked me, like, hey, like, can you talk to us about conflict resolution? Because we have a lot of it. And I was like, okay. And I walked them through it. And the thing was, is that it's not that they didn't know the biblical premise for conflict resolution. They were just afraid to do it. They were afraid to be the bad guy or the bad girl, the bad person, the bearer of bad news. But the thing was, is that they kept putting it on the pastor. And I literally saw, like, his life was being sucked out of him. And I was telling him, I was like, bro, you got to prioritize your health. Like, you are literally, you look dead. Like, you black eyes, you look exhausted. And he was like, no one is stepping up. And I'm like, okay, we'll have a meeting with your leadership. And I had a meeting, we sat down, and it was an admonishment that I gave them. It was a pretty strong rebuke that I gave the leaders, but I also then equipped them and I trained them and I walked through what I'm going to walk through with you guys. And they were crying. Some of them were crying because they were just that deeply afraid because the issues were this strong at this church. And then I walked them through it and then they were just like, okay. And then the pastor was like, okay, you guys are handling the problems now. I'm stepping away from it. He was literally taking off for a vacation for a month, and he was afraid to take the vacation Because he's like, how can I leave at this moment? I'm like, bro, you need to leave. Because it's going to be what they need, is that they need to be in this position where you're no longer there. So they can finally deal with it. And so I told him it's going to go one of two ways. Either the church is going to just tank when you come back, or you're going to find it and like, wow, it really worked. And they finally stepped into it. Praise report about that. He came back, and the people that were sowing the discord were removed from the church. And like all of a sudden, like the church was vibrant and alive again in 1 month of a change, and how conflict resolution brought health to the church. And so conflict resolution is not fun. It's not the things we like talking about, but you guys as ministry leaders cannot be afraid to step into conflict. You guys shouldn't be in this mentality. It's like, well, the pastor should address this. Well, you're my overseer, so you should take care of my problem. And that's not the case. You need to step in and be bold and just trust that God's going to use you in resolving conflict. So we're going to just read some verses, and then we're going to lay out. It's not a lot of stuff we're talking about here, okay? But it should be simple. Okay, so Matthew 18, it's like the text for conflict resolution. But we're going to talk about some stuff. Verses 5 to 6, the key point in Matthew 18 is, woe to the one who causes one of these to stumble. Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me. It is easy to actually to despise the humble. They are like what this was saying is, whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me. This picture is someone who kind of a loser, someone who won't make it, someone who doesn't have the value to be poured into or to be addressed. Like it's just, it's kind of, we want to basically address the humble people. And sometimes it's difficult to address the people who, it's not easy to address these people. It's difficult to address, people who are easily to like overlook. Yet when we despise humble people, we also despise Jesus. And so what the simple point of it is that we don't want to despise anyone. Whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to sin, Jesus takes it seriously when one of his little ones is led into sin. Little ones does not only mean children, but those who humble themselves as children in the manner Jesus described. It is a wicked thing to sin. It is even a far greater evil to lead others into that sin. But leading one of Jesus's little ones into sin is far worse than you leading yourself into sin, because you then initiate someone into an instance of a pattern of sin that corrupts whatever innocence they had. So you don't want to be the one who is leading or promoting or encouraging sin in another person's life. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. A severe punishment is described here. It would be better for the offending one to receive this punishment of the millstone. The stone and anyone attached to it was a sure way to sink and never come up again. And this was a big millstone. This should draw a picture to us. If we are involved in encouraging or promoting or giving the green light to sin, to other people, what Jesus is saying, it's better that you hang this heavy stone around your neck, throw yourself in the ocean, and die, than to have to then to actually deal with this issue. Like, that's how severe of an issue this is to Jesus. It's like, it's better that you just die. At verse 7, it talks about offenses are inevitable, but we are to have no part in offending. So at verse 7, it says, woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to the man by whom the offense comes. So woe to the world because of offenses. The first woe is a cry of pity for the world in danger of offenses. The second woe is a warning to the one who brings or introduces evil to others. God has so ordered it in the wisdom of his providence that he will not restrain the lust of all of men's heart, but some will suffer walking in their own ways. There are going to be people in this world that are just, they die in their sin. And that's going to happen. There's going to be offenses in this world, and there's just some that are never, ever going to be reconciled. But even worse, it says, woe to the man by whom the offense comes. We live in a fallen world, and it's inevitable that sin and hurt and offenses will come. Yet the person who brings the offense is guilty before God and has no excuse. This teaches us that we can let go of anger and bitterness for what people have done against us. God promised to deal with those by whom the offenses come. So God will deal with those that bring offenses in your life. He is going to fight those battles on behalf of you. You don't have to fight those battles. God is your defender. If God promised to deal with those who offend his own, it shows that he defends and protects his own. Let God be your defense. If you are involved in any situation, at the church, in ministry, whatever, in work, let the Lord be your defense. Don't defend yourself. I mean, there are some things that you're going to have to maybe do, but for the most part, like overall, I want to challenge you to practice this heart of trusting that God is going to be your defense. You don't have to fight your battle, because the Lord will fight it, because God won't let an offense, an attack against you go unanswered. He is your defender. So we're going to go into what the types of conflict are. There are many areas of a church where conflict can develop. However, most of them tend to fall under one of three categories. Conflict due to blatant sin among believers, conflict with leadership, and conflict between believers. So these are like the common types of conflict that we see in the church and in the Bible. Conflict due to just sin in other people's lives, conflict with leadership, and conflict between believers. So when dealing with believers or dealing with believers in sin, believers who blatantly sin pose a conflict for the church, as described in 1 Corinthians 5. For the sake of time, we don't have time to go into all these verses, but if you take a picture of it and look at the verses, you can go back and look. The church that does not deal with sin among the members will open the door to more problems. That's what I was sharing about this church. They kept letting these issues go unchecked, and it was starting to metastasize in this church, where it was like obvious that there was issues in the church. The church is not called to be judgmental of unbelievers, but the church is expected to confront and restore believers who are unrepented of sins, such as those listed in 1 Corinthians 5:11. Anyone who calls himself a brother, but is sexually immoral or greedy, an idolater or slanderer or drunkard or swindler, such individuals are to not be accepted by the church until they're willing to repent. So in scripture, we have a basis of like, if we have people in the church serving or whatever, and they're in sexual immorality, they are in sin, and they're not addressing it, You have to be able to be like, hey, like, look, you cannot be serving until you repent. This is a problem. And sometimes the church is afraid to address someone in the, another believer is like, yo, you're in sin. You need to, like, what's going on? But we're so quick to judge the world and to say, like, oh, they're doing this, and they're in this sin, and people are doing this, and the debauchery over here, and the debauchery in Las Vegas, and whatever. But we can't even as believers come alongside each other as believers here in the church and be like, you're in this sin here. And so we got to be, I'm not telling you to be like a sin police and like being over here like, hey, like, writing you a citation, you're in sin. Like, I'm not saying that. But we got to be, we got to be able to press in and be able to confront each other, because loving, that's how we as brothers and sisters come alongside each other. It's like, hey, like, you're struggling with this and you've compromised yourself. You got to step down from serving. But not just stepping down, it's like we got to come alongside and we got to disciple them. We got to strengthen them. We got to be part of the healing process. We don't just discard people just because they're in sin and just say, you can't serve here no more. We have to come alongside and we have to nurse them back to health. The church is supposed to be a hospital for sick people. Not a like country club for people to have a good time. People are in their sin and they need to be helped. Matthew 18, verses 15-7 provides a concise procedure for the confrontation and restoration of a believer. Confrontation should be done carefully, meekly, and with the goal of restoration. You can see more of that in Galatians 6:1. Churches that lovingly discipline sinning individuals will limit a great deal of conflict in the church. That example that I gave you in Mexico, as soon as they dealt with these people that were literally the cause of all the problem, and they removed them, not just from serving, but asked them, I need you to take a break from this church because I need to prioritize the health of our church over your life right now. I need to protect this flock, and I need you separated. And then on top of that, they were dealing with this person separately, outside of the church. And the reality was, once push came to shove, those people did not want to receive the correction. They didn't want to be called out on their stuff. And then they decided to depart from the church permanently because now they were being held accountable. And so for the sake of the church, churches that lovingly discipline sinning individuals will limit a great deal of conflict in the church. At times, believers might not be content with the direction or actions of church leaders. This was the case in the early history, in the church history, in Acts 6:1-7. That's when we were talking about the widows were complaining that, you know, hey, what about us? What about the food? And they delegated. Complaints about the lack of care of a certain group in the church were taken up with the leaders. And this was remedied, and the church grew. The issue, okay, you brought an issue to leadership, we addressed the issue, and the fruit of it was that the church ended up actually growing. And we saw that yesterday, night when we were talking about it. But the early church used a conflict to improve the ministry. However, when churches do not have a clear process for dealing with such concerns, people tend to create their own platforms. Individuals may begin asking others in the church to get involved in the gossip, or even develop a block of concerned people in the church. That's how unhealthy issues in the church can get, where it's like, we, this group of us here at the church, are angry and we're unhappy with this decision, or we're unhappy that this is happening. And so there's more of us rising up. And so obviously it's not me. I'm not the only one. There's multiple of us. And there's a right way and a wrong way of dealing with it. But if you start trying to create and trying to like promote, it's like, oh yeah, you don't like that, right? Okay, all right, here we go. And it doesn't have to be this evil or this mischievous, or you're just like, oh yeah, you're stirring it up, but you're also not shutting it down. You're like, oh, you don't agree with that either. Me either. Who else do you know? Oh, okay, you don't know, okay. And then you start having all these people that are basically on the same page and you're stirring up, and that's not healthy. That is how division begins, is because you're now allowing all these group of people to, like, you're encouraging this type of talk. And so leadership can help avoid this by leading like selfless, loving shepherds that are examples of servants rather than lords over people. And so come to your leadership. Come to leadership and ask and make your grievance known. Make your issue known. Don't go around and trying to like, let's email this group and let's email these people. Let me ask these people what's going on. And let me create a case. Then I'm going to bring it. Because what you're doing is like, now you have like pressed this issue into the church. And it may sound like you're like listening, you're like, this sounds like a hypothetical. No, I've seen this happen multiple times. Multiple times I've seen this happen at church, where people start building cases and then all of a sudden leadership gets involved and we're like, wait a minute, who else is involved with this? Like, this sounds like it's been going on for quite some time. And it's like, how come we never were clued in? Why wasn't this brought to us at the very moment it happened, but yet you allowed it to grow and fester? And so you want to, like, leaders should lead selflessly. The leadership, we should be humble in our approach and care for our flock. But if you never give leadership the opportunity to step in to address a problem, I don't want to sound like I'm like trying to pass the buck, but I'm like, it's not our fault. Like, how else can we address a problem when we don't bring us in? Now, what if you have issues with leadership? Not with me. Those who are frustrated should respect the leaders. Hebrews 13:7 and verse 17. Be slow to accuse them. 1 Timothy 5:19. I'll pull that up. 1 Timothy 5:19. Do not admit a charge against an elder except on the evidence of two or three witnesses. If you have an accusation against an elder or someone, like, do you have witnesses, two or three other people that are in agreement with this? So there's a process, there's a way to handle this. And speak the truth lovingly to them, not to others, about them. Ephesians 4, 15. That says, rather speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ. On these occasions, when it appears that a leader is not responding to the concern, an individual should follow the pattern set in Matthew 18, 15 to 17 to ensure that there's no confusion as to where each stands. We'll read Matthew 18, verses 15 to 17. If your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he listens to you, you have gained your brother. But if he does not listen, take one or two other along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. And if he refuses to listen to even the church, let him be to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. So this lays out levels. The first step here, well, the first step technically is humbling yourself, but on this process is, does it say go and tell your grievance to multiple people? Nope. Does it say go and tell your issue to other ministry leaders? Does it tell it to go tell to another pastor who's not the pastor that you're having the problem with? No. The reality is, it's like, okay, it was like, okay, thank you for telling me your problem with this pastor, but I can't do anything about it. Like, did you go to them? Well, no, not yet. Okay, well, go to them. And if they have a problem and it doesn't go well, then yeah, you can come to me then. But so many times we go to everyone else but the person we have a problem with. So we want to make sure we go to the person we have a problem. But when you are addressing leadership, you want to be respectful. You want to be humble in our approach. We never want to create a defensive reaction. But we want to be careful when we accuse some, like a leader, it's got to be you just have to be able to make the case. But in this situation, like, you don't have witnesses. What do? You go to them one-on-one. Hey, I have this concern. This is what I've noticed, and I want to bring it to your attention. You're not, the accusation is then like, okay, like, this is a bigger issue, and I need other people to be able to bear witness to this issue as well. I pray that we never have to deal with this issue with leadership. And if you've ever felt here at this church that you've tried to address leadership and you've gotten the door slammed in your face and you've been rejected or denied, let me know. And I want to address that. I'm not afraid to address it. I'm not afraid to step into that. But be sure, whatever you bring, that you have gone through the process correctly. Because other than that, it's like, it's not fair that we address this and you fumbled the whole thing. You're like, well, I talked to this person, I talked to that person, then I eventually got to the pastor, and then it's like, well, maybe that's probably what the problem was, is just you like made them look bad and you never went to them, and that's probably what your concern now is with them. Like, you offended them. Whatever. I'm sorry if you've ever felt that way in ministry in general. Maybe you come from a church and you're like, man, I've been under some unhealthy leadership, and it's out there. I've been under some people who rule like a tyrant, not like a shepherd. And it's my desire, and it's, I know Pastor Jerry's desire. I know his character. I know him as a pastor, but I also know him as a brother in the Lord. And you, like, I know some pastors that are pretty arrogant. And they're like, oh, I'm a pastor, you gotta be respectful to me. But Pastor Jerry's not that. He is not that at all. Like, you call him out and you're like, hey, like, this happened. And like, man, I see him like, oh man, I'm so sorry. Like, he owns it right away. Like, I appreciate that about Pastor Jerry, on how he owns if he made a mistake or something, or if he like offended someone. Oh, sorry. Like, there was a lady I saw who was trying to say hi to him, and he didn't notice. And then I told him, like, hey, that lady was trying to say hi to you. He was like, oh, what? What lady? Oh my God. And then he went over her, stopped what we were doing, and apologized, like, profusely. Because he felt bad. He was like, I'm sorry, I didn't want to, like, make that, like, that wasn't my intention. And I know his heart, and I carry his heart. And if you ever have felt that leadership has shut you down, like, talk to us. But again, we want to make sure that we handle these situations correctly. Handling conflict in general. The Bible warns that people in church may have difficulties with conflict. Some conflict is due to pride and selfishness. You can see that in James 4, 1 through 10. And some conflicts come about because of offenses that have not been forgiven. God has told us to press toward peace. And it is the responsibility of each believer to seek to resolve conflict. And so sometimes the issue of conflict is simply that is there's unforgiveness in our lives. There's unforgiveness in our heart. And so we must press on. We must press forward into trying to forgive one another our offenses. Love covers a multitude of sins. But we have to be able to come forward to each other and be able to ask forgiveness and humble ourselves. This whole process begins with humility, which we're going to lay out. This is the very end. You guys have made it. But here are some basic steps toward resolution, and it includes the following. So here are some basic steps that you can take toward resolution. You want to develop the proper heart when you're going to address conflict. So this is like, I was laying out like the groundwork, the foundation, whatever. Now I'm laying out like literally this is the process. Develop the proper heart attitude. When we're dealing with conflict, you want to have a meek heart. You want to know about meekness? Go to Galatians 6:1. You want to have a humble heart, a humble attitude. You want to be forgiving. You want to have a forgiving attitude. You want to be patient. This is my encouragement, my advice. If you cannot step into a conflict resolution situation without resembling these things in your attitude, you're not ready to resolve that issue. You're not ready. You might do more harm than good if you are prideful. And you're probably gonna be like, I'm not prideful. That's your first sign. That you have this unharbored unforgiveness, that you're irritable, it just triggers you, just thinking about it, you fly off the handle, whatever. You're not ready. You need to have the right attitude when you approach conflict resolution. You want to first evaluate your part in the conflict. Matthew 7, verses 1 through 5, remove the log from your eye first is necessary before helping others. Maybe I misunderstood something. Maybe it's possible that I took it the wrong way. Maybe I misheard what I thought I heard. A lot of the times it's like, you said this at church. So the last time I taught, actually, a guy said, you said this. And I'm offended. I was like, really? When did I say that? He's like, you said that in order for you to be saved, that baptism doesn't save you. I was like, uh-huh. And he was like, and that offended me. I'm like, why did that offend you? Are you baptized or not baptized? No, well, my dad got baptized before he passed away, and that's why I think he saved. And I'm like, okay, well, I said baptism doesn't save you. That's what I said. And that's biblical. And then he was like, well, and I was like, what about the thief on the cross? Did he get baptized? And he was like, well, no. And I'm like, well, he's like, well, I'm offended because now I doubt if my dad is actually saved when he died. I'm like, look, I don't understand. And then we like worked it out. And then finally he's like, oh wait, okay, so you didn't say, and you said, this is what you meant. And I was like, that's what I meant. And that's what I said. And he was like, okay, that's cool. And now he's like, he sees me at church. He's like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? Like, we're good now. But he misheard something, and the enemy like twisted something. He was being attacked and casting doubt on the salvation of his dad. And he like misheard everything I said. And he was saying, but he did all these works and he did all these things. And I'm like, again, that doesn't save you. He's like, but that offends me. How do I know my dad is saved? He was a good man. He did all these works. He got baptized. But I never saw him walk it out as a Christian when he was alive. I'm like, I don't know. I don't have that answer. That's between God and him. But I'm telling you, you have the opportunity to make sure you don't look at a checklist of things to have assurance of your salvation. You simply just have to believe in with faith alone. I was like, did you remember I said that multiple times? He's like, yes. I was like, then you can have assurance. I can answer for your dad. And that helped him in some ways. But you want to evaluate your part in the conflict. You want to be able to process and be like, okay, like, where did I go wrong? Because if you approach this and everything's finger pointing and you can't even give the room for the possibility that you maybe understood the situation, then we go back to the first point. It's like, where's the humility in this process? The third thing is go to the individual, not to others, to voice your concern. We saw that already. We read that. This is best done in love and not to just get something off your chest, but accusing the person tends to encourage a defensiveness. Therefore, attack the problem rather than the person. This gives the person a better opportunity to clarify the situation or to seek forgiveness for the offense. A lot of the times, going to the person and the person alone is enough. You're not going to need to go to bring other people into the situation. It's very rare, because as soon as you call someone out on something that you felt like was an offense, but yet you approach it with humility, 9 times out of 10, it's like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. I'm sorry that I did that. Can you please forgive me? It should be quick. It should be easy. But sometimes we get so angry about it, and then we attack, and we're like, we approach it, and then now it's like that person can't even respond in humility, because they're just, you came at them sideways, so now they're gonna come at you sideways. And so if you're looking for a humble response back, you have to start with a humble approach. But you go to the individual, not to other people. If the first attempt does not accomplish the needed results, continue with another person or persons that can help with the mediation. Again, that doesn't give room to gossip. It's going to the next possible people that can help the situation. You're not going to go to your banker and tell, hey, I need to address this problem with someone. They're like, I have nothing to do with the situation. You don't just bring anyone. You bring people that are relevant to the situation. Your overseer, their overseers, someone that can hold someone accountable. You got to go to someone who's relevant in the world of the situation. But it's like, I'm having a problem with this part of the ministry. Then I go over here to the nursery and bring other people into it, and they're like, I don't have no idea what's going on. I don't know what happens during coffee ministry. I'm at the nursery. And I bring the nursery people into the coffee ministry's problems. There's no problems in the coffee ministry, I promise. That's what happens when you sit in the front. But if the first attempt does not accomplish the needed results, bring in the right people that are relevant to the situation. Remember that your goal is not to win an argument. It is to win or gain your fellow brother for reconciliation. The verse says to gain your brother. You have gained him in two ways. First, the problem has been cleared up, and perhaps you realized that he was right in some ways, and he realized you were right in some ways. A lot of the time when you come kind of settle the issue, there's wrongs on both sides. But the problem is now resolved. And so you've gained your brother. The second thing is you have gained him because you have not wronged your brother by going to others with gossip and have this side dispute. Because if you're gossiping about this, if you're going to truly be honest and come forward and ask for like a reconciliation of this situation, but you have 5 people over here that know about the problem, you better confess to that person, be like, hey, and just so you know, like, I'm sorry, I told like 5 other people about the situation, just so you know. Because then you resolve the problem, and then I find out, it's like, did you ever solve this issue? And this person told me about the situation with you, and I'm like, wait a minute, I just solved the problem last week, and now these people are telling me that they know about it. Now I'm offended at you. And now it turned back the other way. Well, this is why it's best. Stop the gossip. Keep it, address the problem head on. Attack the problem, not the person. But if we notice, Jesus did not say that your brother must agree with you or that he should immediately repent. The verse says, at first, it is enough if he hears you. So I address you. This gets people kind of caught up. I address them. He didn't apologize to me. That wasn't the purpose. The purpose is that he heard you. Then that he heard you, he can come to you and be like, hey, look, I thought about what you said. I'm sorry. That makes sense. The point is not to like, well, I want to resolve this now and in the immediate. The verse says that your brother has heard you. If he heard you, you gained him. Because you got past the defensive part. It's like, okay, I heard you. I need to think about it. I need to process this. This is a lot for me. It's not fair. I mean, if you're married and you have a fight, sometimes we can resolve our fights right away. But there are sometimes it's like, look, I'm not mad, but I need to think about it. I need time. And it's the same way when we're resolving conflict, we need to give the other person time to kind of like catch up to where you're at. But as long as they heard you, and if you're on the receiving end, if you're the one who created a problem and they're coming to you, your response, if you're like, I don't know, like, I can't ask for forgiveness. I can't like repent. I don't know. Like, I don't see my error in this. Don't say that. Then it gets defensive. It starts going back. It's like, hey, like, I heard you. I got you. Thank you for bringing it to me, and I'm gonna sit with it. I'm gonna hear it. But don't expect it's like are you gonna ask for forgiveness or what? And it's like that's not the point of conflict resolution. The point of conflict resolution is that you made your point clear in a humble way, and they heard you. And then sometimes it's gonna happen. And it's like, hey, like, let's squash it now. I'm ready to squash it. So, if a situation arises, bring in others, choose people who can help you resolve the conflict. Conflict is best handled when individuals prayerfully and humbly focus on loving others with the intent of restoring relationships. Most issues of conflict should be manageable if the above biblical principles are followed. And so if you have conflict resolution, if you have, you're confronted with an issue, if you go through this process that I shared with you guys, your approach, humility, you're not attacking, you're not coming at them, you're trying to simply just make your offense known, like, how can you not respond in kind? If we are trying to do the right thing, if we are asking the Lord to help us as individuals and we're walking with God, if we're walking in the Spirit, we should be able to resolve conflicts a lot easier than just staying angry. And so if you have conflict in ministry, we're here as ministry, as pastors, as staff, to help you through conflict resolution. But the reality is, you're probably going to hear from one of us, I can't handle that for you. You got to handle it. And it's going to be good. I mean, I think you guys rose your hand. I asked who can deal with confrontation. You guys rose your hand at some point. I don't know. Did I ask you guys that question? No? Okay. Who does not like confrontation? Does not. Like, you can't. Like, I run from confrontation. Yeah, it's not fun. And so, but we know that if we do it the right way, the Lord will bless it. Okay? So Again, that concludes. You guys made it. You guys made it. So again, these are tools to equip you to be in ministry, to serve in ministry, to feel like you guys can be out there doing. You don't have to wait for, oh, I need to wait for my overseer to step into this or to deal with this. I can step into this. I can deal with this. Okay? We want to multiply ourselves. So I pray that you guys were blessed. I pray that this was encouraging and that you guys feel more equipped now than when you guys walked in the door on Friday night. And you guys feel like you guys can, like, okay, like, I feel like I can do ministry. Like, or a little bit more confidently. Like, that was my goal in the class. So, praise God. I'm going to pray for you guys, but that concludes our time. If you guys want my slides, these slides, it's a lot of slides. I don't know how to get it to you guys. It's a lot. I will task Tyler. Delegate. Look, they all said delegate. I will task Tyler on how to get this out to you guys. We have all your emails. This is why it was good that you registered. If you didn't register and you just walked into class, I mean, we're going to have, like, let us know. Give Johnny your email, your contact info if you didn't register. If you registered, we will find a way to get you, we'll email the link of, like, the notes and the slides to you guys. I want to thank you guys for making the time to get poured into, making the time to get equipped. I truly pray that you guys are going to, like, I want to see you guys rise up. I want to see you guys not like rise up against us, like rise up and serve. But I want to see you guys being used by God. It is truly my desire to help you guys walk in God's calling and discover the purposes that God has for you. And God wants to do something beautiful in your guys' lives. And the only way you're going to discover that is by getting involved and going deeper in your service, okay? And so use these tools, tuck these away, and I'm sure you're going to be confronted with situations. You're going to be like, wait a minute, I feel like I heard this before. I know this. And it's better to be equipped than just to do it aimlessly, okay? So we're going to pray and just thank you guys for coming. Lord, just thank you, God, for today and for last night and for just being able to go through these topics, these conversations, these things, Lord, of equipping us, Lord, to be in ministry. And God, is your desire for us to be built up and to be edified. And Lord, this was that moment, Lord, where we were able to pour in and to edify. And God, I pray that you would do a miraculous work in and through my brothers and sisters here today. Lord, that they would be able to discover their callings, that they would be able to discover, Lord, what it is you have for them. And so, God, I pray that you would show them, Lord, what it is that you desire for their lives. Lord, I pray that you would show them what you desire for their marriages, for how to deal with situations at their workplaces, in their homes. Well, Lord, also in their ministries, Lord, I pray that you would equip them. So, God, I ask you, Lord, I pray, Lord, for a fresh filling, Lord, of the Holy Spirit, Lord, upon the lives, Lord, of people in this room that came. I pray, Lord, that you would equip them, Lord, and you would continue the equipping in their lives, and that they would, Lord, be hungry, Lord, for your word, that they'd be hungry, Lord, to grow more, and that they would make themselves available, Lord. So, God, I'm just grateful for this moment, for this opportunity, and I pray that you'd get us home safely, Lord, and excited to for tomorrow, Lord, for being here at the church and fellowshipping and breaking bread and, Lord, just being able to be with one another, Lord. So we thank you, God, and we pray these things in your son's name. Amen.